Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never that debt is fraud. I'm actually going to have to do a special show, maybe this coming Friday, giving you a list of all of the things that need to be repeated, because you're going to hear it today first. In 2028, I will be available to become president of the United States. And so we've got Tammy here. That's big news, isn't it? Now, Tammy, you're probably muted because I know you're there.
Oh, yep. Muted.
So what I'm planning on doing is actually explaining how I would be taking care of the illegal issue. Anybody, any governor, any city council, all your public servants that claim that they want to create a sanctuary city, state, county, I don't care what, if they're in office, they will be removed and banned. Now, I know America wants to see people do perp walks, but the Constitution does not allow anyone in office to actually run an open rebellion against the Constitution. Ergo, we have the authority, and this is why I've been saying the Justice Department needs to actually be retooled to exercising and go and attacking all of these public servants who are violating their oath of office. That's the supreme law of the land. And that's what you can expect from a constitutional president. Now, let me just say this too. And I think, actually, I'm glad you're on today, you know, when I had this epiphany to do this. Mm-hmm. I kind of look at where we are as a nation as the separating of the wheat from the chaff. Those who are wanting compliance to the Constitution and, you know, and living in that, you know, that world, let's call it heaven, and those who don't. And they will be cast out to hell. It's almost like that ultimate judgment. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe we're going to see families split. We will see this nation actually torn apart because there are people that want evil. They want to inflict upon you these concepts and ideas and take away your liberty. Now,
we already saw that during COVID. We saw the split.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's what you can expect from a constitutional president. And that's why if you want to run my campaigns, because I'm actually not running a campaign. I'm going to do this constitutionally. I'm looking for people to run as electors for me. In other words, you're to run in your county or actually your congressional district and or your senatorial district, which would be state at this point. So that, and everybody can run at state, but you need to actually make sure that you're also running in a congressional. And my point is this. We need to restore the Electoral College to function the way it's supposed to function and actually rip it away from the parties. I mean, the only party that loves the Constitution is the Wyoming GOP. As a matter of fact, we've already seen the video of Frank Ethorn demanding that the state pass the bill that would create the committee for demanding constitutional compliance. And actually, is there any news on that bill?
You know what? I'm not sure. I need to go. I don't know. I need to check into that.
Okay. So because do we know when it's going to be heard in the Senate? I guess that's the question, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's big news. I'll let everybody digest that. And because I think it places greater context to my Mondays and Friday shows where I'm not attacking Trump. I mean, we all make choices. And if you really want to get rid of your enemy, you use Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Many of these people that are getting slaps on the wrist are going to go into a corrupt court. That's the biggest problem, that these people that get arrested, they're going to get thrown into some state court or fed state, you know, some district court. And the corruption in the court is going to basically say, hey, that couldn't have happened. You couldn't do that. There is no court case for Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It is an eligibility standard. If you violate your oath of office, you are to be removed and banned for life. That's it. You don't lose property. You don't go to jail. And, oh, then we'll let, you know, the Trumpsters or those people that want to deal with these people in court to give them, you know, that's when you can do the perp walk, but you have to remove them based on their ineligibility and ban them. That's what has to happen. We're not doing that. So if we do that, that sounds like a kid, but if we can accomplish this, then any person that tries to come in, or if they try to go to court to sue for their liberties back, and a judge rules in favor, that judge will be removed just that fast. Because he's supposed to be supporting the Constitution. In accordance with the Constitution, he's obligated to support it. And he can't redefine Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. The Supreme Court can't. If we have to remove every judge in America, then that's what has to happen. And as a matter of fact, the beautiful thing is there's no, what is the standards for a judge on the Supreme Court? In the Constitution, what is the constitutional standard? Not what have they created as a standard. There is no constitutional standard for a judge. Because back in those days, they didn't have JDs and they didn't have a bar, and they saw those things as actually a threat to their liberty. Hmm. Which is why the very first 13th Amendment was passed, this title of nobility, because the Bar Association is a title of nobility. Anyway, yeah. So we are covering the Reconstruction Acts, these evil Reconstruction Acts, where Congress is basically assuming a responsibility over the territory. Now, they can make needful rules and regulations, but they can't pour money into it. To be clear, they don't have the ability to administer welfare, rebuilding, that type of stuff. So I'm waiting to see that, but I haven't seen it yet. And so we were kind of going through that big paragraph, the very first big paragraph that starts with that before the first day. And we kind of got halfway through this oath of office and we ended up running out of time. And so if you wouldn't mind, Tammy, let's pick this up at the beginning and let's just basically go through this. This is a long oath. This is a huge oath, right?
It's very long.
I'd like to see the person who administers this memorize this. This would take a long time to do that. Anyway, all right, let's go ahead.
So start at the beginning of the paragraph?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. That before the first day of September, 1867, the commanding general in each district defined by an act entitled "An Act to Provide for the More Efficient Government of the Rebel States," passed March 2nd, 1867, shall cause a registration to be made of the male citizens of the United States, 21 years of age and upwards, residents in each county or parish in the state or states included in his district, which registration shall include only those persons who are qualified to vote for delegates by the act aforesaid, and who shall have taken and subscribed the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear or affirm in the presence of Almighty God that I am a citizen of the United States of whatever state, that I have resided in said state for however many months next preceding this day, and now reside in the county of blank or the parish of blank in said state, as the case may be, that I am 21 years old, that I have not been disfranchised for participation in any rebellion or civil war against the United States, nor for felony committed against the laws of any state of the United States, that I have never been a member of any state legislature, nor held any executive or judicial office in any state, and afterwards engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, that I have never taken an oath as a member of Congress of the United States or as an officer of the United States, or as a member of the United States and afterwards engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, that I will faithfully support the Constitution and obey the laws of the United States.
Hey, Tammy,
and
you missed the line.
Yes.
Or as a member
did I?
Of any state of any state legislator or an executive or judicial office. You skipped that one line.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm choking here. Go ahead. Just if you would.
That I have never been a member of that one.
Or at the very end, it says, or as a member of any state legislature, that line.
Okay. Or as a member, of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, to support the Constitution of the United States, and afterwards engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof, that I will faithfully support the Constitution and obey the laws of the United States, and will to the best of my ability encourage others so to do, so help me God, which oath or affirmation may be administered by any registering officer.
Okay, so obviously the only people that are being allowed to vote and get registered are those who have not been in public office giving aid or comfort to the rebellion. In other words, that's almost everybody that was in office. And as a matter of fact, when they were going through the 14th Amendment, there were men in Congress that actually wanted to see some people hang on the southern side. They're political advocates for the rebellion, for seceding. Now, I don't understand the visceral. I don't understand why, other than maybe the disdain for slavery or what have you. But, you know, if you create a compact, right? And let's say, you know, you've created this governing compact out, you know, in your part of the world, and you have multiple parties. You got, you know, not just a single party, but you've got groups that are parties to this compact, and you create this creature. So you have this union where this creature is going to serve you, and they're members of the union that actually start doing things that they shouldn't have been doing, waging economic warfare against you and a few of your fellow members of the union. And you happen to be a minority of the union. And so you basically are forced to, because they're violating the compact, you have a right to actually secede. I believe some of these men felt that they couldn't secede. And I believe that they felt that they were justified in their warfare tactics or what have you. But I can't understand anybody that has common sense, logic, and reason being able to take that paradigm that because they revolted, or actually they didn't revolt because they wanted to hold the constitutional standard and affirm that, you don't have the authority to wage economic warfare. It's one thing to try to amend a constitution. And how many more states would have they needed, or would they have not needed to get to, because they were actually there? Now, let me see if I actually have it open, because I got it right here. Sometimes I have it open. And as a matter of fact, when I look at the number of states, there were 22 states that were in the Union that were not a part of the rebellion or seceded. 22. They only needed 21. The problem was that they almost needed 100% of the states in the Union. They didn't need 22. They actually 23. They needed 21. And so that meant two states could have, you know, not supported this. And so maybe they just didn't have the numbers or what, but I know they didn't have the numbers to actually put those types of punishments into the 14th Amendment. In other words, the people that really wanted, they just had this visceral hate and this disdain for these people that revolted against them. when they were actually acting within their purview. Now, it's one thing to, you know, let them secede, but it's another thing to basically allow slavery to, to exist and possibly permeate and compete with America. It would be against our interest. So I can see waging warfare regarding this institution of slavery, but not saying you can't leave the Union because we're violating it. That actually makes no sense. But Lincoln, not understanding the Constitution, and many of the people in those days didn't understand. And as a matter of fact, I found it interesting as I read through the 14th Amendment that they actually brought up the Federalist Papers, the ratification debates, and many other documents and letters and correspondences regarding the Union and so forth and how the Constitution was defined. And so this is where, you know, we start getting this deviation, because if you're of the mind that a state can't secede, then you've bought into a lie. If you're of the mind that Lincoln was, you know, a good guy, you've been deceived. If you're of the mind that the Southern states had a right to come right back into the Union, you've been deceived. They seceded. They're no longer a member. The only way, you know, it's kind of like you can buy a ticket to get in. If you get out, you have to buy a new ticket. It's kind of like going to the movie theaters. Yeah. Sometimes they'll let you, if you have your stub, they'll let you back in. But they don't have to. If for some reason you had to leave and you're coming back in, you got to pay the price, period. And so the Constitution didn't allow for a revolving door. Okay, you can step out and then you can come right back in when we finally, you know, do the things you need us to do. No, it doesn't work that way. And so, unfortunately, because there were these bad paradigms that seemed like they were prevalent, that the perversion and the continuance of deception just went on steroids from that point on. Anyway, any thoughts on this? I mean, this is a pretty hefty oath. And I'm kind of curious. I don't have any afterthought or anecdotal information. That's what I'm looking for. I don't have any anecdotal information that would actually tell us how well received this was. I'm sure there were lots of people that says, I'm not gonna take that oath. You can't make me take that oath. And unfortunately, you know, so let me ask you this. Would it have been better for the Southern states to actually rebel against these basic laws that are violating the liberties of everybody in the South? I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, okay, you have to come back into the Union, but it's another thing to actually go after people and punish them for something that was actually, because let's make this clear. The Constitution doesn't allow for bills of attainder and punishment. And what's a bill of attainder and punishment? It is a law that basically classifies a person as a rebel, as like a rebel. It's a law that classifies a person that was legal at one point. Actually, it's like an ex post facto law as well. It was legal to have slaves. And, you know, so they could make laws. They can't make laws that go after, you know, slaveholders. But they can't create bills of attainder and punishment where they create a classification of people, those people who rebelled. I mean, the Constitution didn't have any laws that said you couldn't rebel.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't secede. They didn't have any laws on that. So technically, they created a bill of attainder and punishment. And the Constitution forbids the federal government from doing that. It forbids states from doing that. Like, you know, when a state passes a law and says, you people who haven't been vaccinated, well, we consider you a threat. And we're going to basically keep you from public spaces and all the, and they're going to punish you. Mm-hmm. That's a bill of punishment. they can't do those types of things. They can't create classes and start dividing and conquering. So anyway, and it's the same thing with the affirmative action is the same thing. It's basically saying if you're not of this class, then you are going to be punished. You won't have access. You don't have priority. Those types of things are bills of punishment, and those paradigms do not exist. And where did we get these things? We got these things from lawyers and jurists. It is these men that are constantly bending and perverting our law, which is why I said I believe almost all the jurists, almost all of them, a high percentage of them, got to go. Now, I don't know about some of the county jurists and so forth, but when you get up to that federal level, you're probably pretty corrupt. Probably. You may be good, but I don't see anybody. Well, I like Clarence Thomas. I like Clarence Thomas, but I don't know if he's actually positioned to, truly become the constitutional advocate. I mean, Scalia was kind of there, but Scalia never challenged the court's ability to create law. I mean, it's pretty hard to pass up that kind of power. When you come up to a mantle of power like that, and you can do these things. Not too many people say, I shouldn't be doing this, even though you actually have that power. It's like Superman having X-ray vision and, looking at women through their clothes. I mean, you just shouldn't do it, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, it's because we understand that there's this higher law that we always have to be living by. And so anyway, I digress. Let's get into section two now. Okay.
Be it further enacted that after the completion of the registration hereby provided for in any state, maybe that's in the way.
I don't think the person that wrote these things, they passed them, but I don't think the person that wrote these things used the same kind of grammar we did.
Yeah.
Okay.
And be it further enacted that after the completion of the registration hereby provided for any state at such time and places therein as the commanding general shall appoint and direct, of which at least 30 days public notice shall be given, an election shall be held of delegates to a convention for the purpose of establishing a constitution and civil government for such state loyal to the Union. Said convention in each state, except Virginia, to consist of the same number of members as the most numerous branch of the state legislature of such state in the year of 1860, to be apportioned among the several districts, counties, or parishes of such state by the commanding general, given to each representation in the ratio of voters registered as aforesaid as nearly as may be, convention in Virginia shall consist of the same number of members as represented the territory now constituting Virginia and the most numerous branch of the legislature of said state in the year 1860 to be apportioned as aforesaid.
So what they're doing is they're basically going by the 1860, which is what they should be doing because there's no point in holding the census at this point. So they're going by the 1860 census of Virginia and basically laying out that Virginia is going to have to redo their constitution and create a new government. And this is where the genie gets loose. And the genie got loose a long time ago, but the genie, they rubbed out a big genie on this one because this is where they basically demanded that the constitution contain certain things that were direct violations of the constitution. Every state that joined the Union hence had those lines in it, and Wyoming has that line in it, that they are inseparable in the Union, subjugating themselves to the federal government. Unconstitutional. So, I see that we're running out of time. We're running into a break here. So, Tammy will be right back. And so, folks, as you can hear, there's that music, that Fanfare for the Common Man. And so when we come back, we'll dive more into the Reconstruction Acts. But at this point in time, I mean, we see some of the heavy-handed stuff that came after this, but and some of the stuff that they were doing by directing constitutions. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so, you know, further analysis reveals, I could see how the conditions in trying to repair the union was very tense, because those people, because we had military men that were actually down there. They were the ones that were tending to and governing these folks. And this was a very bloody war. And so I can see how the emotions would override common sense, logic, and reason. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that happens all the time.
Right. And so one of the problems is when you force somebody this kind of speaks to the power or the problem of the Civil War in ending slavery. When you use force, that doesn't mean that you've created a contrite individual or side, a contrite state. They've been forced to abandon something, an institution that they've had for 200 to maybe 250 years. Because I think when the migration started coming, slavery didn't really, actually it was probably more of 200, because slavery, I don't think, was galvanized to be black and only black by Britain until 1650, 60, something like that. So it was about a little over 200 years of this institution being relied upon for labor and so forth. But to be honest, the only people that, lost and were hurt or damaged because they lost that labor were these large plantation owners, or I should say people that own plantations. Most of the people in the South didn't have slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they didn't like the slaves. I mean, they didn't like the idea of slavery. As a matter of fact, Thomas Sowell, in his book, Black Rednecks, White Liberals, kind of points this out, that slavery was not popular in the South. Now, the other problem is that because slavery was institutionalized for blacks only, it created paradigms and biases that were just bad. I mean, they possessed people. I mean, we've seen movies, we've seen read stories of how people were so possessed with their racial hatred on either side. Now, I can say this, that when other nations basically freed their slaves without fighting a war, I mean, they just kind of came to it. Like when you look at the northern states, when the northern states basically abandoned slavery, there wasn't a lot of animosity. But again, you got to remember that many of the freedmen were offered, you know, transit to Liberia so that they could have and live in a land for themselves of liberty, because they weren't getting liberty in America. Many of the northern states started passing laws keeping blacks from voting. I mean, literally, they were doing those types of things. And so this is one of the reasons why the 14th Amendment was needed, because the states were always being the bad guys. They were being the oppressors. And the federal government, started getting, uglier and uglier as it started assuming powers it didn't have. And it was equally ugly in racism, because the Supreme Court with the Plessy v. Ferguson, separate but equal, that right there took us right back to the Stone Age of slavery, because blacks were able to be, treated completely different and separate. And they didn't have equal. And as a matter of fact, the Constitution of the 14th Amendment kept them from actually doing those things. And this is where the judges again twisted it, because they wanted to basically create a second class citizen so that we would be divided and maintain division in America. Had America healed? And the closest thing we got to healing for the first time was around the 1920s. And it was under Coolidge, where you would find that there were equally blacks and whites working, having jobs and strong families, homes, and those types of things until the Depression. And guess who got laid off? The blacks. The blacks were the first to go. And so that was one of the reasons why Hoover created the projects. Most people think it was Roosevelt, but actually Hoover, who was he was a Democrat. He only ran as a Republican, but he was actually in Wilson's presidential administration, and he actually loved Wilson so much that he actually had the authority to write an autobiography of him. That being said, Hoover was the one that really created the deal, the New Deal or whatever it was. And he was the one that started creating these projects for, free housing for blacks. And it wasn't until, I believe, FDR came in, where he started actually doing the Negro Project, where they were putting Planned Parenthood very close or within, these areas of projects where, unwed mothers could, or, women that had pregnancies. And it was about genocide. They wanted to actually dilute or reduce the amount of blacks in the population. And so, I mean, there's these ugly things that we did as a government and, as people and so forth. And it's all because these biases. Because we can't look at everybody as children of God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure the Lord still loved those people because they were going to church.
Mm-hmm.
I sound like I'm judging here, but we all fall short, and sometimes you don't want to fall short and hard, because when you really treat other people badly, then what is that saying about forgiveness? And when you actually have, you look down on somebody, how is that not the same thing as, not able to forgive somebody for their shortcomings? Anyway, regardless, I digress. It's not about, this is not Sunday today. But one of the things that you are pointing out, and I think this was in section 3, we just read this. And so those voting in favor of such, we read this, right? No, you just read 2.
No, we read 2.
Okay, so I'm reading ahead because I was looking at the highlights. Let's read 3, and then I can talk a little bit about this that I have highlighted. Go ahead.
And be it further enacted that said election, the registered voters in each state shall vote for or against a convention to form a constitution, therefore, under this act. Those voting in favor of such a convention shall have written or printed on the ballots by which they vote for delegates, as aforesaid, the words "for convention." And those voting against such a convention shall have written or printed on such ballots the words "against a convention." The persons appointed to superintend said election and to make return of the votes given thereat, as herein provided, shall count and make return of the votes given for and against a convention. And the commanding general to whom the same shall have been returned shall ascertain and declare the total vote in each state for and against a convention. If a majority of the votes given on that question shall be for a convention, then such convention shall be held as hereinafter provided. But if a majority of said votes shall be against a convention, then no such convention shall be held under this act, provided that such convention shall not be held unless a majority of all such registered voters shall have voted on the question of holding such convention.
Okay, so I think that they kind of put the cart in front of the horse because they wanted people to start selecting delegates. In the very beginning, they say those voting in favor of a convention shall have written or printed on the ballots by which they vote for delegates, as aforesaid, mm-hmm. the words "for convention." And then those you just write "against convention" and you don't put delegates. I think this was underhanded because I believe that this, and this is where secret voting began. Because those who actually were for conventions and writing their delegates, I believe those are the people that the military could trust. And those against the convention were those who were going to be scrutinized. Is this not like one of those divining rods to kind of, you know, separate, you know, those who have favor for the union and, you know, want to get back into the union, and those who just really still hate us?
Yeah.
That's how I see it. And so anyway, let's go for section four.
Okay. And be it further enacted that the commanding general of each district shall appoint as many boards of registration as may be necessary, consisting of three loyal officers or persons, to make and complete the registration, superintend the election, and make return to him of the votes, list of voters, and of the persons elected as delegates by a plurality of the votes cast at said election. And upon receiving said returns, he shall open the same, ascertain the persons elected as delegates according to the returns of the officer who conducted said election, make proclamation thereof, and if a majority of the votes given on that question shall be for convention, the commanding general within 60 days from the date of election shall notify the delegates to assemble in convention at a time and place to be mentioned in the notification and said convention, and organized shall proceed to frame a constitution and civil government according to the provisions of this act, and the act to which it is supplementary. And when the same shall have been so framed, said constitution shall be submitted by the convention for ratification to the persons registered under the provisions of this act at an election to be conducted by the officers or persons appointed or to be appointed by the commanding general, as herein before provided, and to be held after the expiration of 30 days from the date of notice thereof, to be given by said convention, and the returns thereof shall be made to the commanding general of the district.
Okay. Now, this again is what, March 1867, March 23rd. And as I look at those states that ratified the 14th Amendment, Tennessee was one of those. And as a matter of fact, they were the first southern state to actually join the Union because they saw the benefit. And so they didn't have to go through this. In other words, no state had to go through this. They could have just quickly ratified the 14th Amendment and came in. The reason those other states didn't want to come in is because they were very bitter that they lost their property and that their, you know, what they felt was an undeniable institution. I mean, let me just go on a side here. In my first book, I talk about a gentleman by the name of George Fitzhugh. George Fitzhugh was a professor, and he professed that slavery should be for all people. He was basically a communist, and he felt that plantation slavery was far better than government slavery, that both whites and blacks, if you can't take care of yourself, then you should be a slave. If you don't want to get educated and you just work and so forth, that it's the most humane, you know, institution there is in dealing with people that want to be slovenly, you know, derelicts, what have you. Because at least it gives them, you know, work to do and a responsibility and so forth. And so, I mean, he was actually preaching this, and this was in the 1840s.
So he was saying that black people were like that? He believed that?
Not only blacks, because it was far... When you look at how the black slaves were being treated and living in contrast to the poor white people, that was inhumane.
Yeah.
He looked at the white people living in filth and so forth. Black slaves were being better treated, according to him, because they were living in better quarters, they were better clothed, they were better fed, and because the poor people couldn't provide for themselves. I want to make sure you get the argument here. He was really selling this, that all people should be slaves if they're not capable, because you got to remember that they didn't even understand IQs. They didn't understand literacy and the importance of education. I think in many ways they did, but they looked at those people who were just ignorant, and there were people that were just, and I hate to say this, but actually... Are you familiar with Monty Python?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is really going into a deep aside, but Monty Python, there's a character by the name of John Cleese. And John Cleese goes into this little rant about stupid people. And he actually is citing a professor that there are people that are at the level of stupid. And, you know, and this is the professor saying this, and John Cleese is just regurgitating this. And he's saying that stupid people really do not know. They're incapable of understanding how stupid they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so because they literally lack the level of intelligence to analyze and, you know, process those things in their head to understand, wow, I'm stupid. They can't do that. They can't have epiphanies, if that makes sense. And so that this is in modern times. I mean, John Cleese going, if you've never seen it, if you go on this YouTube, you'll probably find John Cleese and stupid, and you'll probably find a little video of him doing that. And he actually names the professor, but I'm here to tell you that there are people that do not have the mental capacity. And as a matter of fact, we call them stupid, but, you know, in other ways, in more politically correct language, we just call those people either disabled or people that, you know, are... Help me out here, because I'm at a loss of words.
Handicapped?
Handicapped, disabled, or, you know, lacking. I mean, because we actually have adults that join the Marine Corps. I remember there was a guy, I'm not even going to mention his name. He worked in a Q-tip factory in Georgia, and he joined the Marine Corps, and he barely made it in with his IQ. And he had a real hard time understanding why he was being punished all the time for not marching right and so forth. And so if you've ever seen a military formation kind of march along, there's this kind of, it's like a wave, right? And it's just a really powerful movement. And when we were moving along in formation, marching, Niljus was literally going up when we were going down. And he was coming down when we were going up. you know, this counter motion in this wave movement, you know, and everybody was in unison except for Niljus. He could never be in step. You know, there's some people that don't have rhythm, some people that don't have, you know, melody, you know, they don't comprehend the tonal differences or what have you, or people that are colorblind. They can't comprehend mm-hmm. color. That doesn't mean that they're stupid. It's just that they are handicapped or disabled in understanding those things. But there are some people with an intelligence that just they, and he was one of those guys. And so he was in my squad, and I actually told the drill instructor that, you know, Niljus isn't, because we were going to go compete for, you know, for passing, as, you know, because you had to do these certain things for the platoon to pass and all of that, these competitions. And anyway, I went to the drill instructor and I said, "Sir, Private Niljus doesn't feel good today, sir. He's going to go to sick call." "Well, it's the formation day. We're going to go march." And I go, "Sir, Private Niljus doesn't feel good, sir." And he looked at me and he kind of, he got it. He goes, "That's how we can march without Niljus." And so anyway, and you had, I mean, you had to do things like that because we wanted to win. Anyway, so I'm ashamed for doing, being a part of that. But the reality is, you know, he wanted to be a Marine. It's just that there were certain things that Marines just, they get, forgive me for saying this, they get anal retentive. They get anal retentive about marching and about uniforms and inspections. I was one of those guys. I actually had a locker with underwear, uniforms, and everything else I never wore. It was inspection ready, and it was always inspection ready. Because I mean, most people wouldn't do that, but you know, if you just wanted to actually have noteworthy and, you know, look good, then you always did that. But anyway, see, I digressed. The reality is, as we're looking at this, you know, this problem in the South, there was a lack of education, so literacy was a real problem. I don't think stupidity was really as much of a problem, but I think that there were so many people that were blinded by their bias, they took stupid positions. Because I've seen people know that they're absolutely doing the wrong thing, but because their pride won't let them do the right thing, they go down in flames or what, they suffer the consequences. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a point in time where this nation was needing of healing, and we had people, one, military, that was, you know, not happy with, you know, losing as many casualties that they had and having to march and having to prosecute this war. These guys down there weren't happy. And so they were doing things that were literally unconstitutional. But when we read these Reconstruction Acts, this is Congress focusing their energies and trying to do these things. But I see how some of these things could have been used as filtering to differentiate who their friends were and who their enemies were as well. And so it's unfortunate that, you know, we have things like that, because this was probably, many of these things kind of set the standards for, you know, the CIA getting more and more manipulative, if that makes sense. But anyway.
Right.
All right, let's go to the next section.
Okay. "Be it further enacted that if, according to said returns, the Constitution shall be ratified by a majority of the votes of the registered electors qualified as herein specified, cast at said election, at least one half of all the registered voters voting upon the question of such ratification, the president of the convention shall transmit a copy of the same duly certified to the president of the United States, who shall forthwith transmit the same to Congress, if then in session, and if not in session, then immediately upon its next assembling, and if it shall moreover appear to Congress that the election was one at which all the registered and qualified electors in the state had an opportunity to vote freely and without restraint, fear, or the influence of fraud, and if the Congress shall be satisfied that such constitution meets the approval of a majority of all the qualified electors in the state, and if the said constitution shall be declared by Congress to be in conformity with the provisions of the act to which this is supplementary, and the other provisions of said act shall have been complied with, and the said constitution shall be approved by Congress, the state shall be declared entitled to representation, and senators and representatives shall be admitted therefrom as therein provided.
Okay, so I have two problems with this, and they're both highlighted. You don't have the highlights, so you have no idea. But here's the real problem. Folks, you want to know how we got democracies in our state constitutions? Congress demanded it right here, because at the very beginning, it basically said when it comes time for the ratification of the Constitution, at least one half, this is what it says, at least one half of all the registered voters voting upon the question of such ratification. That's what it was going to take. Mob rule. Instead of actually recognizing county governments and recognizing the county sovereignty, the people create county governments, and that those governments be sovereign and creating. What they did was they actually went through and created delegates by just general election across the state. If you look at every other state that joined the union, even Wyoming, they set delegates from the counties. They didn't specify any county organization. They were literally forming an administrative state, ignoring the governments that the people created, the counties. And they were literally framing a democracy. Now, and as a matter of fact, you'll notice that in all constitutional state constitutions, they all require a democracy for amending their own constitution. How dangerous is that?
Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing that they actually lumped together was they basically looked at that the election was one at which all registered and qualified electors, they used the term elector interchangeably with an elector. An elector is a representative of the people who chooses the president in America. Right. And then they have this little e elector. Let's just make it more confusing. What we have when we talk about the voters, they, instead of using the word voter, you use electorate. That is the voters, the electorate. But an elector is a position. You know, I know people in the Air Force, and I love calling them airmen, because in the Marine Corps, we're Marines. And so that is a general term that you refer to everybody in the Marine Corps. And technically, in the Air Force, they're all airmen. However, that actually, they made the mistake of creating a rank of that, and everybody gets offended that, you know, because they're not soldiers, they're airmen. Anyway, We've allowed these types of things to muddy the waters. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.